This show is furnished by Rowan, Gervy, and Wynn.
It's time for Gervy's Law, the intersection of law and life, with your host, injury compensation attorney, author, and mentor, Alan Gervy. Alan is managing attorney at the law firm of Rowan, Gervy, and Wynn, a workers' compensation law firm who have represented injured workers for over 35 years. Joined today by his co-host, radio personality, and television host, Carrie Kasem. Carrie brings a fresh, real perspective to the intersection of law and life, turning Murphy's Law upside down. And now, here are Alan Gervy and Carrie Kasem.
Good afternoon, Los Angeles, and everyone listening all over the world on KBC.com. I am Alan Gervy, the law firm of Rowan, Gervy, and Wynn, and I'm the managing partner there. Carrie's looking at me because I don't know what I'm talking about. I'm watching TV right now.
I saw you watching. Like, we're on.
I just forgot about the intro. Yes. So basically on this introduction, I'm supposed to say that I'm the managing partner of the law firm of Rowan, Gervy, and Wynn. And today I'm here to manage your life. I am watching riots and looting, and I have no ability to manage anyone's life. And I'm sure you too, Carrie Kasem, is in studio. Do you have any ability to manage anyone's life during this awful time?
And, you know, there's advice given. I blame our mayor and I blame our governor for what's happening. Not necessarily the protests here, but it just what's happened in the last few weeks, which is not okay. But no, for me, managing anybody's life right now, I'm just getting through my own.
You know, you are going to be very happy to talk to our second guest, who we're going to speak to a little bit later, Mark Garagos, because he's had some choice words against Governor Newsom, governor of California, and Eric Garcetti, the mayor of Los Angeles. And he did a podcast a couple days ago and really called them out for a lot of the policy. So, Carrie, you'll have a chance to talk to Mark Garagos. Well-known criminal defense attorney and civil litigation attorney, represented a lot of people. He'll be with us a little bit later. Today we're going to talk about the lawsuits that have occurred because of COVID-19, the coronavirus, and there's all kinds of issues that come up. And while there are new issues that we're experiencing right now, as Carrie and I both look at the television, she in studio, me in my home, watching some of the things happening in Santa Monica right now, we do want to talk about lawsuits. And there have been so many lawsuits filed over the last several weeks, 1,500 approximately filed in the United States. And these lawsuits involve things like employees suing their employer. And by the way, being a workers' compensation attorney, you are covered by workers' compensation if you are an employee and you contract the coronavirus, or you have to take time off, or you have treatment for it. So you shouldn't worry about it if any employer tries to get you to sign a waiver. There was a case in Las Vegas with Nacho Daddy, who they tried to get their employees to sign a waiver so that they wouldn't sue them if they contracted the coronavirus. Please, please don't sign any waivers. It's illegal. Nacho Daddy later did take that away. They didn't require their workers to sign it after they were slammed for that. That's what workers' compensation is for. And in California, we have a governor's order with presumptive liability for the employer, rebuttable presumption, but there is liability for the employer if you should contract it while working. Of course, the issue is, how do you know if you contracted it while working? So that's one of the legal issues. Later in the show, we're going to have Tom Janarone on, and he is a hospitality attorney in New Jersey. He's going to talk a little bit about these waivers for restaurants and bars and beauty salons. Some companies giving waivers saying you have to sign it so you won't sue us. Again, that's problematic. But we'll hear from Tom as an update on what is going on out there as businesses open up. Especially here in LA, we're starting to see more businesses opening up and what kind of waivers and lawsuits we might expect. Mark Garagos will be with us, as I mentioned, and he's going to talk about suing his insurance company, Travelers, for business interruption insurance. He's going to talk a little bit about the conflict between public health and freedom, and that's one thing that Kerry is big on, right to work, right to liberty, that there is no right for the government to stop you from doing that, and Mark Geragos will talk about that. But before we get to Mark Geragos and to Tom Janarone, we want to welcome to the show Noel Garcia, who's an attorney with Cowper Law here in Los Angeles, and she is the attorney who's representing the class action lawsuit with the lead plaintiff, Akayla Miller. Akayla Miller is a student at Sonoma State University, Cal State University, and they are suing, and I really believe this lawsuit because I'm experiencing it with my kids. They're saying they didn't get what they bargained for when they were sent home and the campuses were closed. The University of California system also has a lawsuit. There's probably 700,000 students between Cal State University and University of California students, and they have a class action lawsuit. So we want to welcome to Gervie's Law right now, Noel Garcia and Akayla Miller. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
It's going to be tough to know the two of you apart, so maybe you can say who you are. We're all remote in this, and Kerry is in studio. First of all, let's ask Noel, who is the attorney on this lawsuit. Tell us a little bit about the lawsuit. Now, I've read the lawsuit. It talks about breach of contract, unjust enrichment, and conversion. Explain to us what the basis from a legal perspective is for the students who are suing the schools.
Yes. So, good evening. We have started this lawsuit and are leading the claim for students and their families in fee cases against the universities. The schools owe the students back money that was prepaid for services, facilities, materials, and different things different from tuition that are related to on-campus instruction. When schools were closed, and the students were essentially constructively evicted from the campuses, they've lost the benefit of all of these services and facilities that they've prepaid for. And now we are just trying to get the students and their families back the money that they prepaid for things that they are no longer getting.
So when we ask Akayla, you are the lead plaintiff, this class action suit. Tell us how you got involved and what your experience was at Sonoma State.
I mostly got involved in this because I saw a huge backlash on social media from students who were complaining about losing this money. I personally have known Noel for years, so we reconnected on Facebook over this, and we really just thought this was the best way to go forward with the class action so that we could get the money back for everyone.
Now, would you have continued to go to school if they kept it open?
Personally, I have an autoimmune disorder, so it wouldn't have been safe for me.
Okay.
I really would have struggled to justify going to school when every day there's thousands of students coming into contact with each other.
That makes sense.
I want to ask Noel something because, you're talking about some of the things that you are suing for that don't have to do with tuition. Noel, isn't it true, though, that when you give money to a school for tuition, there's certain assumption that you're going to get taught a certain way, which includes in classroom, being able to be on campus, to meet with your professors face to face. Why is it that you're not talking about there's a breach of contract for the services rendered? Because I have to tell you from my own experiences, I have two young kids and it has nothing to do with college, but the remote learning and the Zoom classes just aren't cutting it.
Yes. So the schools, we believe, owe the money back for fees. We don't think tuition is the same. There is another law firm pursuing tuition. And while we may not agree 100% with the theory, we're happy that someone is pursuing those issues for the students. The reason we are not going after tuition, one of the reasons, is that students are, even though the caliber of instruction may not be the same, they are still being afforded the same credit towards their degree. And at these universities, the cost of online classes versus the cost of in-person courses is the same. So while the students may not be getting the same level of education, they're still getting the same degree credits that they paid for. So it's a little bit of a different argument than that of fees, where the students aren't able to access any of the services, facilities, or course room experiences that they had paid for through those mandatory fees.
Now, I have friends who they have kids that wanted to graduate, that wanted the cap and gown, they wanted everything. And a lot of the kids are more upset that they actually didn't get to walk across that stage and graduate. Have you had any of those complaints, or is that in your lawsuit in any way?
It is not. Okay. We are strictly focused in our complaint against the CSU system and the UCs on fees. We have not had any students reach out to us specifically about missing that graduation experience and wanting compensation for that. I know that some schools are postponing services until later in the year. So I think it may be an option that's afforded, but I don't know much about that, unfortunately. I'm sorry.
Noelle, I wanted to ask you about the unjust enrichment part of the complaint, because there is an argument that the schools are profiting from the pandemic, and you have that in the complaint. Are they really making money because they are not providing the services that people have paid for? And then you have a part of it which is conversion, meaning that they're stealing basically the students' money because they're not getting anything for it in terms of the fees.
Right. So the students have prepaid these monies, which are earmarked for specific services or access to facilities. For example, let's say you pay $126 for an associated student fee, and that covers certain things that are set forth in the brochures that are given to students and are explained to the students on the website of the UCOP, the Office of the President. And now that the students don't have access to those services or facilities, those monies that were earmarked for something shouldn't be just converted by the college and used for something else. There are videos on the internet of certain town hall meetings or board meetings that have gone on in order to inform the community at large, but mostly the students, about the way the schools are dealing with the coronavirus. And one university administrator came on and said, even if I wanted to give you the money back, I can't because it's already been spent. And that was really telling.
Wow.
Is that they said, we've used that money now to buy hotspots or iPads or transition into online learning. That's great. That's what endowments are for, though. That is what the reserves are set aside, you know, billions of dollars in the UC system, several billions of dollars, and the CSU has rather large endowments as well. Instead of tapping into those monies that they have in reserve, they've taken these monies from students and their families that have been paid for specific services that the students can't access, and instead of have converted those funds, so to speak, for this new crisis.
Right.
And
we only have a minute. Noelle, I'm sorry. We only have a minute. I just have a couple of real quick questions. Let's ask the Kayla first. What has been the response from fellow students? Have people been reaching out to you? Are people wanting to join the class? And I know it's kind of a legal question, but you're right out there in the forefront of it. And the last question I'm going to ask Noelle just to think about is, we want to know an update of the status of the lawsuit. So Kayla first.
Yeah, absolutely. I've had a really wonderful response on social media. A bunch of people have reached out and asked how they can get involved. We are, of course, a class action, though, so we're representing all of the students in the Cal State system in this lawsuit. But a lot of people are really supportive of this because it's not right that the school is taking this money from us and not providing the services they promised.
Yeah, and so let's just, as we close out here, tell us about the status, because people want to know, how successful has it been thus far and what are the next steps in terms of this lawsuit? Noelle?
So we have not received a response yet from the CSU. They have been served, but they have not responded to us. If you look on the website of a lot of the CSU campuses, it is very clear that they have no intention of refunding any of the fees that have been paid or reducing the fees or tuition going forward, even though instruction is staying online and students will be not allowed on the campuses in the fall.
If someone is interested in getting involved, Noelle, what would you suggest they do?
They are more than welcome to contact our office, and we will get information from them and keep them updated as the case continues. We have been telling students that since this is a class action, if there is class certification, anyone who paid fees for the spring of 2020 will be included in the proposed class.
Okay, great. And it's CalPER Law, C-O-W-P-E-R Law, CalPER Law. Noelle Garcia and Michaela Miller, we wish you luck with the lawsuit. And do you hear anything?
It completely dropped.
I'm sorry, I'm getting...
We have public service announcements, and so yeah, it actually cut out.
So everything cut out. So real quickly, Noelle and Michaela, I'm not sure if you heard us, but thanks for being with us.
Thank you. Good night.
Thank you.
Good night.
Thank
All right, we're
so
going to take a quick break. We'll be back with Mark Garagos after this. Thanks.
Welcome back to Gervie's Law. Still thinking about what can go wrong? Instead, let's get excited about what can go right on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Mother, mother, there's too many of you crying.
Yeah, we're back. Barely back. Carrie, is that the first time that's ever happened when you've been live on the air? We've had this alert and it disrupted.
In my 23 years, that's never happened. 23 years live on air, I've never had an alert that actually everything completely went silent. No.
Yeah, I was talking and I couldn't hear anything. So I don't know what happened over the air, but it seemed to be fine afterwards. So we reconnected. And again, that alert was for the Los Angeles curfew that's going into effect, what is that, at 6 p.m.?
6 p.m. now instead of 8, yeah.
Instead of 8, okay. Well, we want to turn the mic over now to one of the only lawyers besides Johnny Cochran to ever be named Lawyer of the Year in both criminal and civil arenas, criminal lawyer and a civil litigator. And he's been named one of the 100 most influential attorneys in California several times. Regularly appears on all media, but one of them that's been most apparent over the last few weeks is his podcast called Reasonable Doubt with Adam Carolla. If you heard the May 29th, 2020 episode, you know that he had some choice words for Governor Newsom and Eric Garcetti, mayor of L.A. You can hear it on Podcast One. Mark Garagos, welcome back to Gervie's Law.
Hi.
Hi.
Thank you so much.
Oh, you're there.
I appreciate all that. Yeah. I am. I didn't leave you guys on alert.
Not for the alert. So, yeah, so you were really pissed off in your podcast about Newsom Garcetti. Talk about that.
Well, Garcetti, to my mind, and, you know, it's only he's kind of doubled down on this in the last 12 hours or so. He has, I think, single-handedly, you can lay at his feet a lot of what's happening in our city. And he's created this situation where he is destroying businesses without any rational basis. He's closing down things. There is no explanation for what he's doing. At least with the governor, when we sue the governor, he realizes that he's going to get an OSC rate contempt from from one of the courts, and he immediately kind of comes to his senses. The mayor has been singularly, I think, ineffective and ineffectual. And the fact that he's now calling in the National Guard in a city like Los Angeles, to me, is just, you might as well resign. I mean, at that point, you've thrown in the towel.
Mark, but there is a rationale that he believes in, and that's public health. Because we're weighing the difference, the conflict between public health and freedoms, as you talked about. So that would, I assume, be the rationale. Yet when we look at the television, see all the protests and the looting, it doesn't seem like many people are taking the public health issue very seriously, at least the ones who are protesting, as there's large groups. So how does he reconcile the closure with that?
Well, I'll tell you what I think the problem was. And obviously, we were following it. But the idea that you're going to close down and quarantine, never before in American history have we quarantined the well. Every time we tried, meaning people who are healthy, every time we've tried that, it's been struck down. So here you've got a situation where they're doing it again, when by all accounts, the first kind of outbreak of corona, so to speak, was in nursing homes, right, in Washington. You knew that. Then you had somebody like Governor Cuomo, who admitted that his directive that nursing homes and assisted living facilities had to accept corona positive patients, all that did was create the crisis. Now you've got statistically, take a look at the data, 46% of the deaths in any area are in nursing homes or assisted living facilities. The rest of the positives, somewhere in the neighborhood of 18%, are in prisons. God, I wonder why, or jails. And then you have correctional officers, and then trailing behind is meat processing plants. So what was the point of, and by the way, I am a lefty Dem progressive from way back. I don't think I've ever voted Republican. But when you look at the data and you see that the shutdowns are where the problems got worse, you have to say to yourself, did we create this situation by shutting down and having everybody housed together? So if, for instance, if you've got a shelter in place and a youngster who, and by the way, there's practically no deaths under certain age groups, but they can be positive and be a super spreader. If that's the case and they're living with somebody who has a condition, a pre-existing condition, why didn't we shut it down for anybody with a pre-existing condition, anyone over 65? And mind you, up until three Fridays ago, even while the country and here our state was shut down, we were still allowing communal eating in assisted living facilities. To me, that's incomprehensible.
You know, Mark, I work with the elderly, and I have for the last almost 7 years. And 2 years ago, we lost tens of thousands of them to the flu. Nobody wore a mask. Nobody wore gloves. There was no death count on TV. Nothing. Nobody cared. Why now? Why are we caring about the elderly and the immune compromised? But, and I'm asking that. It's pretty much rhetorical. I don't think they are. Look at what Governor Cuomo did. I mean, are you kidding me? It's like they're trying to kill them off. And going back to you being a Dem, my dad was. He, blood, sweat, and tears for that party. I don't think he'd be happy with what's happening now. But on the World Health Meter, the Republican states, population 103 million, they lost a total of 9,000, a little over 9,000 people. The Democratic states, population about 104 million, they lost a total of 70,144. I mean, really? Do you think these numbers, to me, how many doctors have been censored saying we have been told to put COVID-19 on people who didn't die of COVID-19? Do you think that's what's going on?
Well, it's even, I think, more pernicious. I represent and have friends who work in hospitals or have hospital chains or things of that nature. There is basically a bounty. You get a financial incentive if it's a COVID-related death.
Right.
So that in and of itself skews the figures. And by the way, take a look at, I mean, if you want to follow the data, and by the way, that's exactly what the CDC says they're trying to do at all times. All of this was based upon modeling. Well, the models were grossly wrong. And anybody who's ever studied any statistics or economics or anything else knows that nobody's got a kind of seize the moral high ground when it comes to modeling. If they did, they would predict what the stock market does. So you've got a bunch of academics who are trying their best, I'm sure, to model things. But you can't just crush people's businesses and livelihoods based upon models that aren't being adjusted and are based on flawed assumptions. And that's what I keep saying. None of this is driven by science. When they have the bromide that says we're going to go by politics, not by science, that's like the old expression is it's not about money. Grab your wallet because that's all it's about.
Well, you know, that may be true, but I want to play devil's advocate for a second here.
Please do.
And when we talk about limitations on freedoms, we see it all the time with seatbelt use, motorcycle helmet use, even curfews that we're talking about. So there are certain things that are done by the government ostensibly in the best interests of the public health. There are a lot of people who are very afraid. They may have a very small chance of getting sick by coronavirus, but they don't know. It's the unknown. So how do you respond to the government people who are really listening to the fear amongst people who don't know what will happen, even if they think they're healthy, and they want people to be off the streets and out of the businesses?
Well, I'll tell you, that's a very good question, and you can answer it by precisely, look what's happened here. When we had the shelter in place, auto accidents, urgent care admissions dropped dramatically. Why? Because there weren't people on the roads, there weren't accidents. People who had heart murmurs or things that they normally would go to the emergency room with, people who suspected strokes wouldn't go. So you can reduce the admissions, you can reduce actual accidents if you just have everybody not on the road. But we don't do that. We make a, there's a risk reward kind of analysis that is part of the social contract. So what do? If you want somebody to drive, you've got a DMV. The DMV gives them a test. They take a test. They know how to drive. You have to know certain rules of the road. Here we're telling people you can't go out unless you wear masks. Talk to anybody who knows anything about masks or communicable diseases, and they'll tell you that sometimes if you don't properly wear the mask, or if you don't properly have a mask that's been disinfected or is properly utilized, that it actually can be worse. There's statistics or data that shows certain people wearing a mask can actually enhance the problems or your risk. None of that was given. Do you know of anybody who's ever said this is how you wear a mask in order to go out? There hasn't been any information of that. All of this information is in a constant state of flux. A month ago, we weren't supposed to wear masks. Then all of a sudden, we're supposed to wear masks. Japan, which didn't close down, but went into social distancing and use of masks, has had much better results than we have. Is that because they're not as obese as we are? Is that what our problem is? The one thing that we've noticed, or one statistic, according to medical professionals, that correlates, and I'm not saying it's causative, but it correlates, is hypertension or high blood pressure. So that's you're going to have the worst results if you've got high blood pressure, apparently.
Yeah, that's true.
One statistic we know.
We're talking to Mark Garagos. Mark, we have to take a quick break, and we'll hear more from you after the break. We want to hear about the lawsuits. It's important for you to talk about the business interruption lawsuits, but we do have to take a break. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
You're listening to Gervie's Law, the intersection of law and life on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Whoa, oh, mercy, mercy me.
Wow. We are back. I'm Alan Gervie. I'm here with Carrie Kasem. And this has never happened before, Carrie. I'm just sitting here in shock. So if you were listening to the show, we said something that hadn't happened in the first 10 minutes when we were speaking. I'm on the phone because I'm at home at Carrie's studio, and we had those alerts, which was for the Los Angeles curfews. They went off. Oh, he's back on. So we were just about to say that Mark Garagos had to leave, but apparently he's back. Mark, are you there?
Yeah, well, my daughter just got engaged, so I got saved.
We just heard that.
Congratulations!
Am I saying this right? Snor Havorum.
Very good. Very good. Yeah.
Aww.
That's Mazel Tov in Armenian.
Exactly. Anushala. She's a lawyer. She's in New York, and she's under quarantine. And she just got engaged, and she FaceTimed to show me the ring, and she's ecstatic, and Dad is delighted.
What a beautiful thing to have happen in all of this chaos and turmoil. What a wonderful thing to come out of it. So congratulations.
Exactly.
That's beautiful.
Right. Wow. And how many people get engaged live on the radio on KABC? So we're thrilled for you. Any time for the wedding, or is that something they'll talk about later?
I think that we'll talk about that after I finish up this and business interruption insurance. Right, that was KABC. I figured it was KABC interruption insurance. So.
Yeah, exactly. Don't sue KABC now, because you're suing everyone else. We won't take much of your time because we know this is such a happy occasion. But tell us quickly about this these lawsuits you filed on behalf of others and as far as your own firm goes, for business interruption against Travelers.
Correct. Travelers has taken the rather unbelievable position that at first they took the position that there was no physical damage because the insurance companies, as all insurance companies like to do, don't like to pay claims. So we said, well, wait, the science now is that the virus can stay on surfaces. That's why we have to use sanitizer. That's why we do whatever. Once we showed that, then they switched it and said, okay, we're going to exclude, not because of no physical damage, but this is, your loss is not caused by the virus. It's caused by a civil authority. And we said, well, yeah, that's true. The mayor did put us out of deem us non-essential in some aspects. And so we're going to make that claim. And they said, well, there's a virus exclusion under that. So it's the typical insurance company doublespeak. And leave it to Travelers. They waited until the day before we filed a lawsuit. We asked the judge in L.A. Superior Court, we want you to determine this. This is a uniquely California insurance issue. They then waited till the day before their earnings were to come out, and their earnings were bad, and they sued us so that they could divert away from it. Well,
what's the lawsuit against you, Mark? What's the lawsuit against you? I don't understand.
For the same thing. They want to sue in federal court because they believe in federal court some federal judge will side with them as a way to kind of manage their calendar, basically, because the federal courts are so overloaded. So
but what was your wrongdoing? What was the wrongdoing that the losses of Garagos and Garagos did?
They're saying that there is that we have no claim and that we made a claim. And so by making a claim, they want the judge to declare we have none.
Why don't they just defend it and ask for attorney fees versus filing a claim against you? It's pretty aggressive for not having a cause of action, isn't it?
Well, at first, because they had to do something the night before their earnings came out. And then so they filed this thing so that they could get a headline. Then they took the lawsuit that we filed against them before that. And they did what's called removal. They removed it to federal court and then asked that it go to the same judge. So all they're doing is forum shopping or judge shopping because they didn't want it heard in the L.A. Superior Court. It's nonsense, but we'll prevail eventually. In fact, the AXA, the multinational insurance company, was just ordered in France within the last 48 hours to pay their business interruption. And there's a couple of judges across the country that have made the decision that it shouldn't be in federal court, and they banded it back to state court. The insurance companies are trying their damnedest to avoid, you know, they've taken premiums for 10, in some cases, 20 years from businesses. And
right,
I don't want to pay. I was actually chuckling yesterday, and, you know, it's a horrific sight to see people getting their businesses looted. But there was the one guy on Melrose, and I sure hope he's got business interruption.
Yeah, I saw it too.
because you know, that the insurance company is going to end up having to pay for his entire inventory that's been sitting there for the last 2 months.
Yeah.
And he's welcoming all the looters in so he can get his reimbursement.
Yeah, take everything. They won't pay for Corona. That's fine. Pay for this.
You know, why don't they focus on damages? Because isn't that the more interesting issue with your lawsuit? We've had Ben Mycelis, your
partner.
We love having Ben on. And we know he's working hard. He's done some really wonderful work over the last few weeks, and we know that. So how do you prove damages under these circumstances when you're working and can be successful, even remotely?
Because there was that first month was really kind of a terrifying, not just for us, but for all the clients. I mean, if you were to sit in our office or get the emails that come in, you know, Silver Lake Flea Market is one that they finally opened up yesterday. I've had countless restaurants, countless gyms, countless companies that are teetering on the edge of going under. that are trying to get some kind of compensation when they were paying premiums. And part of what's infuriating about this is the insurance companies are now basically trying to shift their liability to the government, even though they've been collecting premiums for business interruption. They're trying to exclude paying that.
Right,
so they can
right.
sit on your premium money and then let the government have to bail you out as opposed to them who've been collecting the money. That, to me, is just unconscionable.
It is unconscionable. And the fact that they have actually made money on the premiums, because the stock market went down initially, then came back significantly, we would say, and they had all that money that they were holding on to. That's a completely different issue. It's very frustrating, and it's a good point you make. We're going to let you go, but before we let you go, we do want to know, because there are so many of these businesses that you're representing in lawsuits, are they going to see satisfaction from the insurance companies before they're forced to go out of business? Because we're not talking about Garagos and Garagos. You guys are going to survive. But there are some that you have mentioned, like some of the restaurants, some of the beauty salons, massage parlors, and some of those other companies. How are they going to survive while you're suing the insurance company without that money?
That's what the insurance companies are counting. They count on. They count on kind of this war of attrition that you're just going to go away. We're not going to go away. We're going to make sure that they're held accountable. We're going to make sure. You know, I keep saying the insurance commissioner could go a long way with helping the businesses in this state. He should issue a declaration that if you want to do business as an insurance company in this state, then you need to pay these business interruption claims and not try to exclude on a ginned up virus exclusion. Part
right.
of the reason the insurance companies get away with this is because the courts are closed. So you can't go in and I can't get a debt relief action heard until
exactly.
another 10 days. So they,
that's exactly true. It's so frustrating. So frustrating because the insurance should be paying, not the government. We're losing all this money through the government when the insurance companies have collected the premiums and are really profiting from the pandemic, which is unfortunate. You know, Mark, we really appreciate you being with us, especially on such a special day for you with your daughter getting engaged again. Congratulations. Good luck with
Thank
that and
so
good luck
much.
With the lawsuits. Thanks for being with
and
us.
And do more TV shows because Notorious was one of my favorites and I'm really bummed it went off the air.
Oh, thank you so much.
And everyone in the meantime can listen to Adam Carolla and Mark on Reasonable Doubt. It's podcast one. So you can take a listen for some really interesting commentary. All right, we're going to move on.
Thanks,
Mark. Take it easy. We've got such a jam-packed show today, and we want to move on to our next issue, and the next issue involves waivers. Some of you out there may be told that you have to sign a waiver before you go into a restaurant to eat in the restaurant, or before you get a massage, or before you get your hair done. Is that legal? I'll tell you one thing. From the workers' compensation perspective, the fact of the matter is, don't let an employer tell you to sign a waiver because you have your rights. You have workers' compensation claim that can be filed if you can prove that prove that it's happened at work, even though in California there's a presumption that it did. So we want to welcome to the show right now from New Jersey, a hospitality attorney. How many times, Carrie, have we spoken to a hospitality attorney?
I didn't even know they existed. Until now.
Well, you're going to meet one right now. He's also a nightclub operator for many years. With the losses of Thomas Janarone, we have Tom Janarone on the line with us. Welcome to Gervie's Law, Tom.
Hi, Alan and Carrie. Thank you so much for having me. And yes, we do exist.
Tell us about that. Before we talk about these waivers and what's going on in the restaurant bar business, tell us what you do as a hospitality attorney.
Well, there's a lot of things that go on in the hospitality world, attorney-wise. My specialty is in nightclub, restaurant, bar operation, and that stems for everything from alcoholic beverage control violations to business transfers, things of that nature. Not so much
right.
into the intellectual property end of it, although I have done that, as I've also done entertainment law as well, so...
So let's talk about these waivers because, you know, here in California, just in this last few days, as Mark Garagos was just talking about, the mayor of Los Angeles, the governor of California have given orders that they can open up, restaurants can open up with certain limitations. We still don't have the bars, but beauty salons as well, certain limitations. what is the situation with waivers? Because some people are running into these issues where people say, we're going to absolve ourselves of liability from coronavirus if you sign this. Should people sign it? And if so, how much value can you put on it?
Well, you know, it's it depends. And I hate to sound like a typical lawyer and tell you it depends. But I can say this, you know, waivers are kind of a false security blanket for many because there's let's assume a waiver is adequate in all of its respects. And there's like four different things that a waiver really needs to cover for it to even be adequate or enforceable from the get-go. But you're talking about an area, you know, historically premise liability, which is the you know, what I do with the restaurants and stuff. Waivers are very uncommon. This is a new time, and if you just take it from the you know, from the real person perspective, you go to a restaurant, you know, to escape reality and have a great night out. The last thing you want to do is have a piece of paper thrust in front of you with legalese on it that's at least a page long, and that you have to read and sign something and that says, hey, look, if you eat here, you could get sick and die. I don't know that that's the best customer service from that aspect, first of all. And second of all, I have serious questions as to the enforceability of a waiver. And one of the reasons why is that historically the waivers are disfavored, and they're given strict judicial scrutiny. And the reason why is because waivers tend to be against public policy.
But what about the ones, what about the, you know, because when you film a TV show, right, you have to put something out, especially in California, that says, you know, if you don't want to be filmed, then basically don't come in this area. What if somebody put that right outside of their, you know, restaurant? If you get coronavirus, you know, that is, you know, take responsibility. You're walking in here. You're walking in here to eat. You know,
I agree. I think a warning is probably, you know, when I speak to topics, I speak to as a I've been an operator in a business longer than I've been an attorney, even though I'm an attorney for over 22 years, I guess it is. But you're right. I think a warning from a customer service standpoint is good. But the problem is that why it's against public policy actually speaks to this. The reason why waivers tend to be against public policy is because what it does is it encourages the lack of due care. And so if a restaurant, let's say you have certain things, criteria that a restaurant owner has to do to be open. I don't know what they are. You guys are ahead of us on the East Coast. We're not open yet, but probably right. Next week. And there's going to be certain things probably nationwide. PPE, temperature taking, strict protocols on cleaning, and all these other things. So you can't sign a waiver and then have a restaurant owner say, hey, you know what? They signed a waiver. We're not cleaning stuff. Our staff's not going to wear masks. We're not going to inquire into our staff that are serving the public if they've been exposed to COVID or anything. Yeah, and that type of situation where you have a restaurant owner that's going to rely on a waiver and not have the reasonable care. That's the duty they owe. They owe the customers is reasonable care under the circumstances.
And that's really what the issue is, because I'm glad you said that, because you don't want these establishments to not take the cleanliness, the social distancing seriously, and to use it as an excuse. But on the other hand, you want to think that if someone did sue a restaurant, for instance, or a bar when they open, that establishment would defend themselves by saying, you can't prove that you contracted coronavirus here at this restaurant.
So, okay, I'm glad you said that, because let's run the exercise. I mean, let's assume there's you know, a negligence case, and I'm speaking of common law here, not necessarily state law, because it changes state by state. But just in general, let's assume there's foreseeability, there's a duty of care, and the restaurants are, you know, are required to do certain things.
So, but what if there's contact tracers? You know, if you happen to be in a restaurant and somebody has COVID and they find that out, they're going to take every single phone that has the iOS 13.5 update and then go to each one of your doors, knock on your doors and tell you, you have to be confined for 14 days. And if you're a single parent, social services will take your kids. This is what's going on right now. I think it's more, I mean, the waivers, yeah. But what if they track you? What if they trace you?
But that's what I think Tom's talking about is to prove it. That may be one way that they want to prove either it occurred or didn't. And if you're a plaintiff attorney, then maybe you're saying you want to see whether someone in that restaurant did have it, and then you could show liability because that's where the plaintiff got the virus.
And that's where I was going. There's going to be major causation issues. And, which is necessary for a successful negligence suit, assuming there's damages, foreseeability, and the duty of care. You're going to have some causation issues because, let's say, for the example, four couples go out and meet, and let's say tables of eight are allowed. I don't know what that is in California, if tables of eight are allowed. So four couples decide to meet at a restaurant. There could be an asymptomatic couple that infects the other six. And the other six people. So how is that? So that would go to how is that the restaurant's fault? Did it occur at the restaurant? Let's assume they can trace it back and it did happen there. So a waiver may help. But the bottom line is if the restaurant followed all the protocols that are required by the government. Look, disease is nothing new in restaurants. There's food poisoning. There's measles. There's flu. There's all sorts of things. We're dealing with the public here. So, let's say that this is completely outside all those things. And if you've followed and you've taken all the reasonable precautions, I would argue that the restaurant's not going to be responsible, even if you could contract trace it back, as long as the restaurant has followed all of those proper procedures, number one. And I don't think a warning is a bad thing because, you want to avoid a lawsuit. And one of the ways you avoid a lawsuit is when you beat the attorney, so to speak. When a person goes to a plaintiff's attorney and say, I want to sue, and immediately they get presented with, look, we followed all the procedures, we had warnings, and if assigned waiver, that could chase a plaintiff attorney away. I just don't know if waivers are practical. And I don't think they matter if you followed all the proper protocols to begin with.
I agree with you completely. I think this is absolutely.
Carrie, you should have been an attorney.
I know we have only like 30 seconds left, but I do agree with you. I think we need to keep the economy going. I think people need to start taking responsibility for themselves. The flu goes around, killed 80,000 people 2 years ago, 63,000 last year. I'm sick and tired of people not taking responsibility for themselves. And the bars that have opened up and restaurants seem to be okay.
In 10 seconds, what in your crystal ball, what do you think is going to happen? Everything's going to open up, no waivers, no liability. You're not going to have to defend the restaurants. And
I think some restaurants will put out warning signs. I don't know if there's going to be many waivers, although there are in other countries are doing it. I don't know that there's going to be that type of liability. There may be a couple lawsuits, but ultimately I don't think it's going to.
This show was furnished by Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn.